Welcome to another episode of Across the Pond, where we discuss the big stories and top investment ideas from the Eurozone, Switzerland and beyond. At the time of recording, the tech-heavy Nasdaq has just hit a fresh record high for the first time since February. And while easing worries over tariffs have been helpful, it's no secret that the underlying driver has been enthusiasm for AI. This is a technology where the US has been very much in the vanguard, both in terms of boasting the bulk of AI innovation and capital spending, but also in terms of companies adopting the technology. But as our guest today will explain, this doesn't mean that investors should neglect AI opportunities in Asia and Europe. I'm Christopher Swan.
And I'm Belinda Peters. So as we enter the second half of this year, where should investors be looking for exposure beyond the top US tech companies? To explore where we see promise outside America, we're delighted to introduce CIO's own tech guru, equity strategist Sandeep Guntori.
Good to be here, Belinda and Chris.
Great. Thanks for joining us, Sandeep. I mean, just to kick things off, I guess we should probably start by recognizing the obvious point, which is the US is, as you've explained to us several times, way ahead from the rest of the world in almost every measure that we choose on AI. And it really is a technology born in the US. And obviously sort of being adopted at a more speedy pace in the US. But give us a sense of sort of how big this lead is and why it arose.
Right. So I would say the three critical components of this AI theme in general are obviously the chips that are used, what we call the compute, then the large language models, and of course the application, which is the adoption. And I think where we see right now, I guess, across the three areas, clearly US has a significant first mover advantage. So starting with chips, obviously, a lot of these companies are based in the US, mostly on the design front, but from a dollar, from a value capture point of view, clearly US companies actually have a massive first mover advantage when it comes to the critical compute. So just to give you some context, almost 60% of AI spending that we are seeing is happening in compute, and clearly it's led by the US companies. On the large language model front, or what we call LLMs, again, most of the leading LLMs are based out of the US. Despite the scare around DeepSeek earlier this year, clearly US companies are leading innovation. Finally, on the adoption front, we have US companies leading adoption across both consumer and also enterprise. So based on the latest data, in second quarter, US AI adoption rate is actually reaching almost 9.2%. And very soon we will see that reaching 10%. And to put things into context, e-commerce penetration in the US actually took almost 24 years. And for generative AI, it's only 3 years. And I think we are going to see that or hit that 10% penetration. So far ahead in terms of penetration and also adoption in the US as compared to both Asia and also Europe.
So just talking about US dominance, I mean, you were mentioning that there seem to be like sort of three main layers in the AI field. Perhaps you can sort of break that down in a little more detail and sort of outline exactly what kinds of companies and functions we're talking about here.
Sure. So the three layers we see in AI, starting with the enabling layer and then intelligence layer and then application layer. So obviously, as the name suggests, enabling layer looks at companies in the infrastructure space. So pretty much brick and mortar companies in data centers, semiconductors, you know, the power and related investments that go there. So you need to build the infrastructure because AI is a very compute intensive, you know, and capex intensive business, which unlike other asset-light business models in tech requires huge upfront capital investments. So once that's done, obviously, you know, why are you investing so heavily is to build intelligence. So that's where your investments in the second layer go into. And those companies that are exposed to large language models, big data, you know, even cybersecurity. So anything that has got to do with data are companies in this kind of second layer. And finally, the application layer is once you have the first and the second layer in place, you have to obviously make money, monetize whatever investments you have made, so which is where you will find companies in application layer, including software, internet companies, and potentially companies across industries, whether it's healthcare, fintech. And I think it's only a matter of time every sector will fall into this category. But at this stage, mostly, it's still the software and internet-heavy industries which are exposed to this particular third layer.
I mean, just for a quick bit of context, though, how impressive has the innovation has been the adoption, in say Asia and Europe, just to sort of compare that 10%, 9% figure that you just mentioned?
To be fair, there's no clear transparency, and also the data in both Europe and Asia, we don't have such granular data. Having said that, anecdotally, I would say Asia, thanks to DeepSeek and some of the recent consumer-driven innovations, I would say maybe around mid-single digit, and Europe should be somewhere low to mid-single digit. So still early days in both Europe and Asia.
So given the US dominance in this area, why would you bother diversifying beyond the US or looking beyond the US for investment opportunities?
Sure. So clearly, if you look at the evolution of any previous tech themes, so starting with internet, later with cloud, you're right that initially, I think a lot of wealth creation happened in the US, but eventually we have started to see, particularly when adoption and also innovation has reached a more mature stage, we started to see more companies emerging. And we have seen that in case of internet with some of the biggest internet platforms today actually are based in Asia. And as far as enterprise software, we also have a handful of very interesting companies in Europe. So I think once the penetration rates in US reaches around, let's say, 15 or 20%, and I think the rest of the world also tries to figure out, and probably once regulations are also set in place, I think it's only a matter of time, including opportunities in private markets where we think that right now in both Europe and also in Asia, we're starting to see a wealth creation happening beyond the concentrated list of companies in the US.
And we're actually, you know, cheating a bit in this episode of Across the Pond, because we usually focus on investment opportunities in Europe, but Asia, as you mentioned, is quite a bit ahead of Europe in most aspects of AI, right? So maybe we can start there. Which countries or sectors are leading the way in tech innovations, and you know, what are their key drivers behind their success, you think?
Sure. So, I mean, of course, Asia is quite diverse, right? So let's start with the more manufacturing side of things, where clearly Japan, Korea, and Taiwan, clearly on the semiconductor side, have a huge scale advantage, including mainland China as well, where we see a lot of companies, particularly in terms of memory and other parts of assembly. So these are the four markets where on the manufacturing side, Asian regions or markets are exposed to. But as far as adoption is concerned, at this stage, China is leading. Thanks to low-cost models like DeepSeek and the many models that have emerged, including if you also look at how China, for example, has consumerized many technologies in the past, including internet, cloud. I think normally China is quite advanced there. India is a big market, but traditionally India is more focused on services. So a lot of AI-related services are actually based in India. So to give you some context, 25% of the R&D in some of the leading semiconductor companies is actually based out of India. So the market in Asia, I would divide into three segments. As I said, manufacturing, where Japan, Korea, Taiwan, and mainland China are exposed. On the application side, clearly mainland China is leading. And on the services and in terms of providing support, I think India is having clear first mover advantage.
So I mean, moving on to Europe, I know when you were discussing this, when we were talking before, you mentioned that Europe is really bringing up the rear here, but it doesn't mean that nothing is going on here in Europe. So maybe you can dive a little into what's happening in Europe. Where are some of the most promising technology subsectors or themes? Are there any sort of unique strength that European tech is bringing to AI?
Sure. So let's first start the question, why adoption in the region actually is lagging behind. I mean, some of that has got to do with regulations. For example, regulations like GDPR, which deals with data, clearly has slowed down things. And I think it's only a matter of time. We will see the kind of services that consumers enjoy in US and also in Asia. I think it's only a matter of time that those get implemented in the region. But second, also a vibrant ecosystem, not just from a talent, capital, but also the availability of companies, let's say from big pool of internet platforms and also the enterprise application companies. There are not many companies out there in Europe, so probably these are the things which have slowed down. So let's look at some of the biggest use cases of AI globally today in the enterprise market, right? So when it's consumer, we all know, you know, ChatGPT or Gemini are typical consumer use cases. When it comes to enterprise use cases, Copilot is a good example of how you can integrate Copilot in office productivity, like your MS Office, MS Word, or Teams. And we don't have many such companies in Europe today integrating AI. But as I said, probably it's only a matter of time. And we're starting to use AI in the region as far as Europe is concerned, because traditionally European enterprise software application companies are more focused on the more back-end kind of what we call, you know, supply chain management, enterprise resource planning. So those are the big companies exposed in the region. It takes some time to integrate. Normally AI right now, the low-hanging fruit is, the consumer-facing or anything that has got to do with workflow management, which is a low-hanging fruit. Whereas in terms of the back office, it takes a bit of time. But we think it's only a matter of time, probably in the next 6 to 12 months, even those traditional application companies that are based in Europe will start to embrace AI.
And what about the Middle East? I've heard that, you know, Saudi Arabia has been especially enthusiastic. Is this maybe an area investors can gain access to?
So I think Middle East is a bit unique, right? I mean, normally when it comes to other parts of tech, we haven't seen, you know, a lot of, you know, at least advancements there. But why in the field of AI? I think Middle East is uniquely positioned. Is, I would say, it's freedom from legacy assets. So if you go back 15 years, Europe and US are the two biggest adopters of technology those days. I'm talking about early 2005. Because those markets benefited from strong IT infrastructure, including huge sales of PCs, personal computers, laptops, notebooks. But when it comes to China and India, most of them, they didn't have, at least the consumers didn't have, you know, PCs. But thanks to smartphones, the low-cost smartphones, they managed to leapfrog because they never had any of these legacy assets like broadband network, you know, or, you know, desktop PC. They directly leapfrogged into, you know, the handheld smartphones, which is the only computing device that they owned, and it has mobile internet. So as a result, if you, you know, come to Asia, you normally see, you know, consumers here are quite advanced in terms of using payments on mobile, ride hailing, or basically in India and China, you know, everything happens on mobile phone. And even today, a lot of consumers actually don't own a PC at home. At best, they own a tablet, but smartphone is pretty much what, you know, basically most of their computing requirements is done. So this is what I meant. It's freedom from legacy assets. So they don't need a PC or they don't need a broadband network. So same way with Middle East today, I think one advantage it has is that it has, Middle East as a region, they don't have to go through the huge investments that US, Europe, and then now China and India has done on the legacy infrastructure when it comes to mobile infrastructure, you know, broadband infrastructure. They are leapfrogging directly. And just the way we wrote in the past that China and India benefited from this mobile-first strategy, I think Middle Eastern companies are benefiting from AI-first, which means right from the day of inception, they are AI-native companies. Just the way, you know, some of the biggest e-commerce companies in Asia in the past were, you know, mobile-first, mobile-native companies. So today, a lot of companies in Middle East can become the, AI-native companies. And in combination of many of these economies transitioning to, you know, services-driven economies away from oil-driven economy, we have started to see favorable policies and the huge investments you might have seen last month, where I think billions of dollars of investments were led by the two biggest regions, Saudi Arabia and UAE. So billions of dollars being spent on AI compute and data centers. So a combination of, you know, a vibrant young demographic society, proactive government, huge investments, and also freedom from legacy assets is probably makes Middle East a unique market going forward, which is a reason why I think today, other than US and China, if you look at some of these companies with huge presence in terms of large language models, actually they're based in Middle East, not in Europe, not in India, not in Japan. Actually, I would say Middle East ranks number 3 as far as innovation in LLMs are concerned.
So this also leads us onto the question how investors can gain access to these opportunities more broadly. So you touched briefly upon the topic of private markets. How does the landscape of AI and tech innovation differ between public and private markets across these regions? And what would this mean for investors?
Sure. So what is also unique for AI so far has been that a lot of wealth creation actually initially happened in public markets first. And only in the last few quarters, we started to see companies emerge in private markets, which is totally opposite to what we usually see with, let's say, internet, cloud, and other tech teams, where, you know, first you see startups emerging, and maybe 3 or 5 years later, you actually see them getting listed. Why? Because obviously, as I mentioned earlier, a lot of these companies in the enabling layer benefited in the initial wave, and obviously, given how capex intensive AI is, those companies are largely public listed. And that's probably the reason why you have seen semiconductor companies, data center companies, power and related companies benefited. And we still believe they will benefit. But at the same time, investors have to look beyond those, and which is where we think opportunities would emerge in private. So we would definitely recommend investors to broaden. And when they have this AI exposure, beyond look beyond only the first layer, and as part of broadening, not only look at the public listed companies, but also when it comes to the second and the third layer, actually there are a lot of companies which are not listed. So to give an example, most of the LLMs today are not actually listed. So you can access a lot of them through venture capital, for example. And as far as the application layer, yes, there are some listed companies in software and also internet, but equally, a lot of them are also unlisted, which can be accessed through private equity. Interestingly, this is where I think Europe is. We will find a lot of companies in Europe in private equity, a lot of companies in the private equity software and also related segments. So I would say within global context, I think a lot of companies in US benefited from the first layer. On this, as far as the second layer, you will find a lot of companies, venture capital companies, both in US and China and some in Europe. But in the third layer, I would say there's a level playing field where you will find across companies across Europe, US, and also Asia, including in the private equity software space.
Great. So maybe we can just sort of wrap up here with a sort of jumbo final question, which I'm sure most listeners would really want to know the answer to, which is, I mean, you've mentioned a lot of possible investment themes, but if you had to give us layer 4 or maybe being greedy 5, whichever you prefer, ways of sort of taking advantage of AI outside the US, what would you suggest?
Sure. So let's start with the enabling layer. We still think investments will continue, including in data centers and power and related companies. And there, we believe outside the US, we will find a lot of companies in data centers in Middle East, in Europe, in Asia, including also companies exposed to power and utilities, because obviously, we are seeing the share of AI capex spending going up into industrial AI, and a lot of companies are actually based in Europe. On the second intelligence layer, we would recommend looking at venture capital opportunities in Asia, mostly in China, some in India, and also across the rest of the world, including Middle East. But clearly, Asia has a clear advantage as far as LLMs are concerned. And finally, on the application layer, we definitely see interesting monetization opportunities emerging. So there are a lot of interesting listed companies in Europe, in Asia, particularly the Chinese internet companies. As far as Europe, a lot of software companies are listed in the region, including some of the big consulting companies. Whereas in the unlisted space, we think we will definitely find a lot of opportunity in the private equity space in Europe and obviously some in India as well. So at this stage, our key message is to broaden their AI exposure, given the concentrated positions in the last 2 years, particularly in the US, have worked very well, and it's time to broaden the exposure and look for a bit more balanced exposure. And clearly, there are going to be a lot of opportunities emerging in Europe, Asia, and also Middle East.
So thank you, Sandeep, and thanks to our listeners as well. We can delve into specific securities on these podcasts, but you can explore some of these with your UBS representative. But we do highlight some of our key investment themes across the enabling intelligence and application layers. In fact, our research highlights that transformational innovation, especially in areas of artificial intelligence, digital infrastructure, and automation, remain a key driver of investment outcomes in the second half of 2025. So we'll be back soon with another installment of Across the Pond. And in the meantime, have a great week.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.